This is the Thursday Morning Zine. Good morning. I'm Jeff Pope, and I'm joined this morning on the Zine by James McKenzie, who's the director of the Dine Policy Institute. And today we're talking about food sovereignty and an initiative launched and run by the Dine Policy Institute at Tse Lee College. James, good to have you here this morning.
Thank you for having me with you.
So let's start with just some basics, James. First of all, you're in Tse Lee, Arizona, which is northeast Arizona, up about 7,000 feet, just a little bit outside of Lukachukai, in the mountains there, and on the campus of the college. That's where Dine Policy Institute is. First, what's the Policy Institute? And then we'll ask, what's the Food Sovereignty Initiative?
Sure. Thank you, Jeff. So the Dine Policy Institute is based here at Dine College, and it was really formed as a partnership between the Navajo Nation Council and the Dine College Board of Regents back in 2005. Really got its start more in 2006. And we say that our mission is really to articulate, analyze, and apply the Dine Behazani, which is the Navajo fundamental laws or the foundational laws, to any issues that are impacting Navajo people. And we do that through education, through collaboration with communities and with different Navajo Nation entities, and to serve as a resource really for policy and research. And our approach is really to start with Dine traditional teachings. We call that Dine Behazani, Betsesalei. And from that, out of that, to frame issues, to understand them in a way consistent with the Dine traditional teachings, but then also to look at mainstream research. The folks on staff here have those backgrounds as well. And to, as you said, to kind of mesh those things, to look at any policy issue that Navajo Nation or Navajo communities and people could be facing.
That seems innovative just on its face, as it relates to essentially having a think tank right inside a college to support Dine policy and culture. Tell me how the Food Sovereignty Initiative fits into that mission and vision. And as you do, I guess you'll talk about how this started and the need for a food sovereignty initiative.
Sure, sure. Well, to start off, the Food Sovereignty Initiative was launched in 2011 by Dine Policy Institute. We've been looking at, you know, since that point, researching the Navajo Nation food system in so many different ways. And the purpose is really for us to understand better the systemic issues that are shaping our food system, the Dine food system, and the negative impacts, the health, to the economy, to the communities, culturally, in terms of our environment, all these impacts that we're facing. But not only that, to just identify those challenges we're facing, but also to understand and to contribute to knowledge and pathways that will maybe foster better opportunities, maybe greater self-sufficiency for us as a Dine Nation, promote better health and sustainability among our people. Right now, you know, just a little background to talk about why this is an important topic, and food sovereignty is a huge issue around the world right now, but it's very big on the Navajo Nation as well. We are faced with a very high incidence of nutritionally related illness in comparison to the general American population. Just to show how that's changed over, you know, relatively short time, and when you consider all of our history, in 1937, there's a study we cite that in Ganado area that shows out of 6,000 Navajo people, there was only one incidence of diabetes reported. But then you fast forward to today, and some estimates by IHS in the 1990s were 22.9% of folks that had diabetes of Navajo people. And today, they're even estimating closer to one-third, some people even put it closer to one-half almost, of Navajo people who either are diabetic or pre-diabetic. That's a huge, huge jump in the incidence of just diabetes alone, but we see that also with other nutritionally related illnesses. And so what we notice and what we see is that there's a lack of access to fresh, healthy, affordable foods on the Navajo Nation. And so out of that, as well as some of the other factors that are related to our environment, to our economy, and then also to our lifeway and our culture, the Net Policy Institute decided to focus on this initiative starting back in 2011.
If you've just joined us, this is the Morning Zine. I'm Jeff Pope speaking with James McKenzie. He's the director of the Dene Policy Institute, which is housed at the Salie College, Dene College in Salie, Arizona. We're speaking about the food sovereignty initiative that they've begun, and they're actually rolling it out right now. Before you tell us about the rollout, I know you had a meeting last night in Lukachuka. So I understand the health impacts. What are the cultural impacts of not having control of your food supply or not having a sovereignty over any community's food is brought in, grown, distributed, exported? What kind of cultural implications are there?
Oh, they're great. They're great. So one of the things that we did through this research, we took a multifaceted approach to it, trying to be very holistic in our approach. And one of the things that we did is work with our traditional knowledge holders, our elders, the grandmas and grandpas. Some of them are traditional practitioners, to identify what are those key traditions, histories and stories and teachings and lessons related to food, anything to do with food. And what we found, you know, these are things that our families know anecdotally that they'll talk about, but we were able to then really articulate it and put it into our report, which is now finished, is that there's so much of our lifeway as the Dene people that used to be two generations, three generations back, inextricably, what looked like it was inextricably intertwined with food production and consumption, anything to do with food. And we say that, you know, really Dene food sovereignty has to come with the idea of not only self-sufficiency, in that we don't have to depend on other entities or groups for the food supply that we have, but also those foods being able to identify for ourselves and establish our own culturally appropriate systems and sustainable systems that will not only supply the food for us, but also sustain us in the way that we have identified as an appropriate way to live as the Dene people. And so teachings and values, lessons and ethics of hard work, of family and community, all of that goes into food production and food consumption, anything related to food. And that's what the elders have told us through that particular approach, as well as the growers. We worked with people from the communities around the college who are producing right now, or who are trying to produce their food, and it's the same message, is that food production isn't just about feeding yourself. It's also about building individuals and developing individuals' responsibility, ethics, and values, as well as community and the larger extended family. So all of those things go into it, and they're afraid because they note that there's a disconnect that's starting to form from some of those teachings that have sustained us for so many generations going back. There's a loss of that traditional knowledge that has to do with the stories and the values and the ethics that used to produce very strong, healthy, well-rounded people who were living in balance, what they call hojong in Navajo. And that's something that the elders are really afraid of seeing lost. And so we identify all those things and talk about ways that we might be able to breathe new life into those teachings, and ways to connect younger people to those teachings. But even people up into their 40s and 50s are noting that they don't have that knowledge. They don't have somebody they can learn from now.
If you've just joined us, this is the Morning Zine. I'm Jeff Pope here with James McKenzie. He's the director of the Dene Policy Institute. And we're talking about the food sovereignty initiative that they have launched at Dene Policy Institute at Dene College in Salie, supporting communities in and around Salie, Arizona. We're going to take a quick break here and be right back to talk more about food sovereignty, not just on the Navajo Nation, but around the world. We're back. This is the Thursday Morning Zine. Good morning. I'm Jeff Pope here with James McKenzie, director of Dine Policy Institute, located on the campus of Dine College in Salie, Arizona, but serving the entire Navajo Nation. James, when we left the conversation, we were talking about the cultural impacts of a lack of food sovereignty. And I'm struck, and you and the team must have been struck, that this isn't a problem that is related just to Dine people. It's a problem all over the country, not just in inner cities, but even in rural areas where people are growing or ranching. And food sovereignty affects us all. And what strikes me is that the folks that may have the greatest food sovereignty sometimes are the ones with the greatest resources. And they may be really far away from the land. And those of us that are even close to the land, we sometimes aren't connected and aren't sovereign in our own food decisions.
Right, right. So through some of the research that we did, of course, I mentioned the work with the elders, the knowledge holders, but we also did some extensive literature and historical reviews, kind of more in a mainstream academic sense or approach. And through a lot of that research, you know, we really identified that race and ethnicity, especially, they play a big role, as well as income level and access to vehicles. The USDA has a map, mapping system and a definition of what they call a food desert. And through our study, we really talk about what that is and what it means. And food deserts are really places where there's a lack of, and this is a big word we talk about through our initiative quite a bit, is just the word access. Very simple, but access to fresh and healthy and affordable foods. These are key pieces to the definition of food sovereignty, along with the culturally appropriate component. And so what they find across the nation and also internationally is that oftentimes that these things are strong indicators for a likelihood of lack of access of food deserts. That being, you know, we find higher incidence of food insecurity, which would be kind of the opposite of having that food security, access to food, in communities where there are lower incomes. Oftentimes those are communities of color. And oftentimes what also goes hand in hand with that is higher incidence of these nutritionally related illnesses. And so it goes to that point when you're talking about food sovereignty, and this goes into the historical aspects and the waves of different peoples who have come to the area where Navajo people are. When we look at in our area, is that the food system changed dramatically, especially in the late 19th and into the 20th century. And when that happened, our whole concept of food and everything that went with it changed dramatically as well. And so the foods that that used to sustain us and nourish us, and through so many different hardships, they were basically pushed to the side in large part and supplanted with very different types of foods that our bodies had not really accustomed themselves to. One great example is dairy. Dairy was highly pushed through, especially through boarding schools and other federal programs on the Net people, on Navajo people, whereas it's still, you know, estimated that the majority, some say about 75% of Navajo people are lactose intolerant. And so you can imagine if you're being told every day, drink milk, take this, you know, eat this dairy food, what that does to the Net people, whereas foods like corn and beans and squash, things that we traditionally had grown going back many, many, many generations, were kind of pushed to the side in terms of what was prioritized. And all of that plays into this idea of food sovereignty.
So let's bring this forward with the history and the large contract, and bring it home to the communities that the Food Sovereignty Initiative from Dine Policy Institute is working to impact. First of all, what communities are those, and what is the impact that the initiative is trying to accomplish as it begins to roll out? And maybe we can talk about the meeting you had last night with the community in Lukachukai.
Sure. So we've wrapped up the actual writing. So we conducted all of this research over more than a 2-year period, and through that research, we partnered with 5 communities around the college. That being Salee Wheatfields Chapter, Round Rock Chapter, Lokajagai Chapter, Many Farms Chapter, and Chinle Chapter. And we really was through this community-based participatory research, that type of an approach where we involve the people in the communities, that we were able to do a lot of this and accomplish it. And the idea, the main objectives were really to come up with these ideas, these pathways to foster greater self-sufficiency and health for the Diné people related to our food systems. So to that end, we've written this lengthy report. It's about 90 pages long that we are now getting ready to produce and be able to provide not only to the chapters copies, physical copies to them, but also it'll be available on our website, which is at the Diné College website at www.dinécollege. It's spelled kind of like Dine College, D-I-N-E, college.edu. And there's a link to institutes and programs. Diné Policy Institute is there. We're going to post that on our website so that anyone in the whole Navajo Nation, but not only Navajo Nation, other indigenous peoples around the country, there are many other indigenous nations that are interested in the work we've done with food sovereignty. We want them to be able to use that as kind of something they can look at to go off of. And that's really the way we approach this for Navajo Nation also, is that there's only 5 chapters that we worked with here, but we looked at it as a demonstration. In other words, there's more than 100 chapters on Navajo Nation. We couldn't get as one small entity to all those chapters to do the type of work we did. So we took this sampling as a fairly representative. There's all different types of governance systems and terrain, topography, all of these things, sizes of chapters within the 5 chapters we worked with. We're hoping that they can then use that in different regions of Navajo Nation, as well at the central government, to use as a demonstration that people can learn from and maybe replicate, but also use to create new solutions that will help to solve and address a lot of the issues that we're facing as a Navajo Nation related to food production and consumption.
James, what are the, if you've just joined us, this is the Morning Zine. It's KSJD Spring Membership Drive, and I'm Jeff Pope here with James McKenzie, who's the director of the Diné Policy Institute in Salee, Arizona, at Diné College. James, just as you look at the 90-page report, what are the key concepts or ideas that came out of it from your perspective? Everyone would have a different perspective. Or what are some key learnings or maybe things that surprised you about the research that maybe also could be low-hanging fruit for communities?
Well, some of the big things that we see, some big implications. First is that not only have we heard it anecdotally, but now we see it through. We did more than 230 surveys and interviews with folks from the communities towards the consumer side, and what we see fairly clearly is that there's a lack of access. People have a lack of access to fresh and healthy foods. That's in their own words.
What does that mean? Like, I mean, we throw that term around, but like, paint the picture. What does it take to get a fresh something in the communities that that this report covered?
Well, I'll give you an example. Many of the people, the majority of the people in the study area, said that they travel off-nation to be able to access the foods that they want to get. In other words, to do their shopping, because when a wage-based economy that we're now living in, we buy food, right, at the grocery store. It didn't used to be that way. 2 generations back on Navajo Nation, we used to produce our own food in our farms. So the people that are traveling from the communities that were worked with in this study, they're traveling at a minimum 155 miles round trip to get their groceries. And so in comparison to the national average, you know, you ask people from a city like Denver, there were some folks who visited us not long ago, and we presented to them on this. They said they travel 1 mile, 5 miles, 7 miles to get their food round trip. The people in this area are traveling at a minimum 155 miles to get their food. At a maximum, some people are traveling 220 or more miles round trip to get their food. And by that, we mean, you know, fresh vegetables and fruits, the meats that are of the quality that they're hoping for, all of those types of things. They're saying they don't have access to it here. Not only that, they're saying that the majority of them, 75%, are saying that they feel that the foods that are available here on the Navajo Nation are causing the high incidence of nutritionally related illness like diabetes and hypertension and obesity and things like that. What we also found that's really interesting, this pulls in the cultural component, is that 90%, it's like overwhelming, it's very clear, 90% of the people we worked with in these communities said they're very interested in traditional foods, traditional food, seeing traditional foods and having access to them, but also the knowledge and the teachings related to that, and not only for consumption, also for the agriculture that goes into that production of that food. So it's a clear message we're getting from our communities that people want to reconnect with some of these ways, and they see that the food system we're currently living with is causing a lot of the at least the health issues that we're facing today.
If you've just joined us, this is the Morning Zine. I'm Jeff Pope here with James McKenzie. He's the director of Dene Policy Institute. They have just completed a study, a 90-page study they rolled out on food sovereignty as it relates, and in partnership with five chapters, Saylee, chapter house of Saylee, Round Rock, Chinle, Many Farms, Lukachukai, and Wheatfields. If you'd like more details on this report, you can go to denaecollege.edu. That's D-I-N-E college.edu, and look for the Dene Policy Institute link. And the whole study is there that you guys have put together. And are there recommendations coming out of that study, or is it too preliminary to move that?
No, absolutely. There are many recommendations that are coming out, and I'll just hit a couple of them because there are many of them. A big one that came from the communities themselves actually is towards public education, reconnecting people with a lot of these teachings, the traditional knowledge on food, anything related to our food production, but also awareness around building awareness related to things such as food desert. What does it mean to be a food desert, and why is that different? How is that different from other places in the nation? Things like genetically modified foods and in genetically engineered foods. Many of our people in our communities aren't aware that a lot of the food that they consume is genetically modified. Many of them aren't even aware of what the term genetically modified means. And when we do talk about it with them, what we've noted through our study is that they want to distance themselves from that. There's an aversion to that type of thing. And a lot of that stems from our traditional teachings related to all the life beings that are there. But there's so many pieces of education that could be done, from planting and gardening to water harvesting and traditional methods on that, to cooking and others. Not only that, but there's a lot of opportunity for us to work with current Navajo Nation programs to make sure that local, fresh-produced foods are included in what's offered not only in Navajo Nation governments, but also with farm-to-institution within the schools. Of course, schools are a huge place where so much food is consumed, but there are so many regulations that make it very difficult for local producers to get their foods into the systems that it makes it very challenging for them. So we've talked about Navajo Nation potentially taking on their own food safety standards and not working under the USDA standards. We can create more access points. Again, that's a huge word, access points, for not only for slaughtering facilities, for our cattle and sheep and things like that, which we're very, very limited on right now, but also for groceries, for the actual produce. We can do things like mobile groceries, which have experienced some success in places like New Mexico. So there's more. Land use policy reform is a big, big one, and turning over more of that control on the land use and the management of it to the local communities, as opposed to having it centralized with like the Bureau of Indian Affairs as it is currently. There's many, many recommendations in the report, so I'll leave it to the listeners. Maybe they feel free to contact us here at the Policy Institute, or to look for our report, which isn't quite up on the website soon, but it will be very shortly. So.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in and talking on the phone today. James McKenzie, director of Dene Policy Institute. I'm struck as we leave that food sovereignty as it relates to the Navajo Nation is you bring sovereignty to a new level when you talk about food deserts, and it's fascinating. And good luck on the work as it rolls out this summer and the recommendations. We'll look forward to getting updates later as things move forward. So thank you, James. He's the director of the Dene Policy Institute, which is located in Sali at Dene College. Dene College serving the Navajo Nation in two states of. With the Navajo Nation, of course, in three states. This has been the Monday or the Thursday morning scene. I'm Jeff Pope here. And thanks so much for joining us. James, thanks for being on the phone today.
Thank you very much, Jeff.